Today, betting on the taco trade or bust. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update, where we start in the US, cross to Europe and Asia, and end in Australia, and cover commodities and crypto along the way. Markets have clawed back towards record highs in recent weeks, following the early April Trump tariff experiments. The MSCI Global Index was flat on the day, but is still up 5.28% year-to-date. And the European Stoxx 600 was up on the day and 5.7% year-to-date, while Wall Street ended flat, with the Dow dipping 0.1%, but is up 0.83% over the past month. The Nasdaq edged up 0.1% to be 2.43% higher over the past month, and the S&P 500 was virtually unchanged, but up 2.15% again over the past month. Part of the lackluster trading on Friday reflected the pending expiration of $6.5 trillion worth of options, known as triple witching. But I can't look past the S&P 500 trading at 22 times forward earnings. That is way too expensive. And by the way, the ASX slid on Friday, but is still up 4.25% year to date. While investors are mulling a host of different market scenarios, should the US deepen its involvement in the Middle East conflict, and the potential for ripple effects if energy prices skyrocket, frankly, it seems that global markets are placing bets on the TACO, the so-called Trump always chickens out trade. Their faith might be about to be tested as the world waits to see where the conflict in Iran goes next. Trump, of course, is relishing being the center of attention and has suggested he could join the Israeli attack on Iran anytime in the next 2 weeks, as he strings us all along every day. Note that there is no risk premium priced in for a deterioration in the situation in the Middle East, and the not negligible probability that the Iran conflict risks a serious disruption to global energy supply. In addition, the July 8th deadline for the end of the Trump tariff pause is looming, and investors have decided, well, it'll come and go without drama. But just ask Japan about that, as increased defense spending is now back on the US agenda. And by the way, the only completed deal so far is a very limited agreement with Britain. The third risk is around the Fed. Could Trump really sack Powell? That's probably just hot air, but the independence of the Fed is an ongoing issue to watch. Trump ratcheted the risk up a little late on Friday night, launching a dramatic and actually grammatically challenged assault on Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, repeating his view that interest rates should fall. Trump reckons they should be 1 or 2%, not 4% to 4.25%, as Powell left them earlier in the week. Trump went for the jugular, variously calling Powell a numbskull and a total and complete moron before delivering the killer line. Maybe, just maybe, I'll have to change my mind about firing him. But regardless, his term ends shortly. Now, you could take the above quote as a sort of double threat, a direct one to Powell, and also an implied one that the next Fed chair is going to be very much Trump's man. The ironic thing here is that Trump might be right. Actually, US interest rates do arguably need to come down to support a weakening economy and signs of trouble in the labour market. But as Trump himself said in his social media rant, I fully understand that my strong criticism of him makes it more difficult for him to do what he should be doing. Trump's tariffs have made it very difficult for the Fed to move before it sees the evidence of tariff-led inflation, and Trump's criticism of Powell probably hardens the latter's resolve to be seen as unaffected by the president's backseat central banking. Federal Reserve Governor Christopher Waller did say the central bank could lower interest rates as soon as next month, reiterating his view that the inflation hit from tariffs is likely to be short-lived. At this point, investors expect the Fed to cut rates at its September 16th and 17th meeting, though much will depend on what happens during Powell's summer of watching and waiting. Persistently high inflation may limit the central bank's ability to ease monetary policy aggressively, which could reduce the appeal of non-yielding assets like gold. Indeed, gold futures prices dropped during the Asian and early European trading sessions, marking their first weekly decline in 3 weeks. The downturn comes as investors offloaded gold to cover losses in other markets amid intensifying geopolitical turmoil in the Middle East. Safe haven demand appeared to weaken despite rising tensions due to liquidity concerns. Reading the state of the US economy, by the way, is complex, as Fed policymakers' median outlook for gross domestic product growth has fallen to 1.4%, well below trend from the 2.1% projected back in December, with the unemployment rate now projected to rise from the current 4.2% to 4.5% by the end of the year. That would be the highest level outside of the pandemic employment spike since the early 2017 period, when Trump's first term was starting. Inflation, that Powell said had been grinding down, is now anticipated to rise to 3% this year and remain nearly half percentage point above the Fed's target through 2026, as I discussed in an earlier post. This all sounds and smells and looks stagflationary. One economic clue is that the US housing market is shifting towards buyers, as the gap between house sales and list prices has never been larger. The US home median list price reached $425,950 for the 4 weeks ending June the 8th. At the same time, though, the median sell price was $397,000, or $28,950 below list price. That's the highest on record. This gap has rapidly widened over the past few months. Additionally, only 28% of US homes are now selling above the asking price. That's the lowest for this time of year since 2020. And US high-paid tech jobs are declining, with IT jobs in San Francisco and Northern Silicon Valley down to 107,700 in April, the lowest since June 2020. Since August 2022, the industry has lost around 25,400 jobs, or 19%. By comparison, after the 2000 dot-com bubble, the tech industry lost just 29% of its jobs in 18 months and did not start to recover until 2011. While US crude prices have climbed some 10% over the past week, the S&P 500 has seen little change as of yet, and if supply is disrupted, things will get negative. Analysts at Oxford Economics modelled three scenarios, ranging from a de-escalation in the conflict, a complete shutdown in Iranian production, and a closure of the Hormuz Straits, each with increasingly large impacts on global oil prices. In the most severe case, they say oil prices could jump to around $130 a barrel, driving US inflation near 6% by the end of this year. Although this price shock inevitably dampens consumer spending because of the hit to real incomes, the scale of the rise in inflation and concerns about the potential for second-round inflation effects likely will ruin any chance of rate cuts in the US this year, they said. Brent crude futures have risen as much as 18% since June the 10th, hitting a near five-month high of $79.04 on Thursday, although it fell back to $77.01 on Friday. WTI was at $73.84. The accompanying rise in investors' expectations for future near-term volatility in oil prices has outpaced the rise in volatility expectations in other major asset classes, including stocks and bonds. The VIX, remarkably, was down across the week to 20.63. Geopolitical tensions have been mostly ignored by equities, but they are being factored into oil, Citigroup said in the note. Perhaps traders are betting on any pullback in equities being fleeting. During past prominent instances of Middle East tensions coming to a boil, including the 2003 Iraqi invasion and the 2019 attacks on Saudi oil facilities, stocks initially languished but soon recovered to trade higher in the months ahead. On average, the S&P 500 slipped 0.3% in the first 3 weeks following the start of a conflict, but was 2.3% higher on average 2 months following the conflict. That's according to data from Wedbush. An escalation in the conflict could have mixed implications for the US dollar, which has tumbled this year amid worries over diminished US exceptionalism. In the event of US direct engagement in the Iran-Israel war, the dollar could initially benefit from a safety bid. But longer term, the prospect of US-directed nation building could probably weaken the dollar. The US dollar index remained firm, though, supported by its safe haven appeal, and was last at 98.71. But remember, still 9% down year to date, which is a big move. But perhaps commodity markets are now at the heart of an intensifying global trade war, with the latest escalation largely driven by the re-election of Donald Trump and renewed US-China tariff tensions. RBC Capital Markets assessed the scope of potential fallout across global commodities and mining equities. According to RBC, even if tariffs were to be rolled back in full, a scenario deemed highly unlikely, the damage from broken trade relationships and heightened uncertainty could linger. The current reality, however, suggests ongoing escalation. The global commodity complex is already reacting, with many prices retreating from recent highs and pressure building across cost structures. At current spot levels, iron ore would have to fall another 18% to hit its so-called cost support level of $80 a ton. Such declines would directly import miners' earnings. By the way, it was last at $93.70 in Singapore. Elsewhere, with the eyes of the world rightly trained on Iran, Amazon chief executive Andy Jassy's warning to his employers about artificial intelligence's threat to their jobs feels like a bit of a sideshow, but in the long run, the gloomy prediction may turn out to be a deeply consequential moment. He warned that Amazon will end up with a smaller workforce because of AI. Numbers from US employment data firm Live Data Technologies showed white-collar staff numbers across US public companies have already fallen 3.5% in the past 3 years, but more recently, what could be written off as a gentle belt-tightening has turned into something else. The billions of AI agents that Jassy expects across every company and in every imaginable field are still some years away from becoming active, yet already white-collar employment is under threat and unemployment among new US college graduates is running at 6.6%. That's the highest level in a decade. Last month, the chief executive AI developer Anthropic, Dario Amodi, predicted AI could wipe out half of all entry-level white-collar jobs and send the unemployment rate to between 10 and 20% in the next 1 to 5 years. It suddenly doesn't sound so far-fetched, does it? The day after Jassy's warning, Treasurer Jim Chalmers delivered his big set piece speech on the new Labour government's economic agenda. Productivity was mentioned 28 times, but guess what? AI only got one mention, and then in a very vague promise that Labour will seek to capitalise on the huge gains on offer, not just set guardrails. Tells you all you need to know, really, doesn't it? But this week's comments from Jassy and Chalmers address the real potential for a white-collar squeeze to emerge in the coming years. That could happen as AI starts to hit employment, gradually at first, and then in a much more meaningful way. And the government looks for new sources of revenue. As the AFR reflected, life may be about to become more uncomfortable for white-collar households than it's been for, well, generations. And to add to the spice in the AI story, I note that Taiwan's Foxconn and US artificial intelligence chips maker NVIDIA are in talks to deploy humanoid robots at a new Foxconn factory in Houston that will produce NVIDIA AI servers. This would be the first time that an NVIDIA product will be made with the assistance of humanoid robots and will be Foxconn's first AI server factory to use them on a production line. A deployment expected to be finalized in the coming months would mark a milestone in the adoption of the human-like robots that promises to transform manufacturing processes. Automakers such as Germany's Mercedes-Benz and BMW have tested the use of humanoids on production lines, while Tesla is developing its own. China has also thrown its weight behind humanoids, betting that many factory tasks will eventually be performed by such robots. The US 10-year Treasury yield remained mostly unchanged this week at 4.376%, and the 2-year was last at 3.906. Over in Europe, British stocks closed lower on Friday as US President Donald Trump postponed a decision on striking Iran following a tough week marked by Middle East tensions. The Bank of England held rates at 4.25% but hinted at a possible cut in August, citing a weakening jobs market and global uncertainty. Meanwhile, UK retail sales fell sharply by 2.7% in May, reversing the strong 1.3% growth seen in April. That's according to the latest from the ONS. The decline was driven largely by weaker spending on food stores coming in below economists' expectations. Also, government borrowing exceeded forecasts in May as Britain's public sector borrowed £17.69 billion in May, coming in higher than forecast at £17.1 billion. The blue chip FTSE declined 0.2%, and the British pound was flat against the dollar, trading at 1.3448. Meanwhile, the DAX in Germany gained 1.4% and the CAC 40 in France gained 0.5%. Bank of America Global Research on Friday raised its year-end target for the Stoxx 600 index to 530 from 500 on resilience in global growth following the US-China trade truce. They said European equities remain close to all-time highs despite the global trade war and escalating tensions with the Israel-Iran conflict. The main reason for this resilience is that the events have not yet translated into a clear-cut weakening in global growth, they said, maintaining its negative stance on the region's equities, though. The brokerage current target for the pan-European benchmark index still implies a nearly 1.1% downside to close at 536.54. In passing, it's worth noting that several European central banks cut rates this week, including the Swiss National Bank and Norges Bank. They both cut by 25 basis points, reflecting easing inflation and slowing growth. Most Asian stocks firmed on Friday after US President Donald Trump postponed any decision on US involvement in the Israeli-Iran war. But Japanese stocks lagged after hot consumer inflation data and hawkish Bank of Japan comments ramped up expectations that the central bank will hike interest rates further in the coming months. Japan's Nikkei 225 and Topic indices lagged most of their Asian peers on Friday, losing 0.1% and 0.3% respectively. Export-orientated stocks were the biggest weight, as they were pressurized by some strength in the yen. Japanese core consumer price index inflation, which excludes volatile fresh food prices, surged to a near 2.5-year high in May, according to data released on Friday, while underlying inflation hit over a 1-year high. The data was followed by the minutes of the Bank of Japan's early May meeting, which showed several members of the Bank of Japan's board supported the bank's rate hike path. The strong CPI data also came just days before the Bank of Japan kept interest rates steady, but warned that it was likely to hike if inflation continued to rise. Friday's data spurred on bets that the Bank of Japan will hike rates as soon as July, but Japanese markets are still sitting on some gains for the week. Tech-heavy Asian exchanges were the best performers for the day as the sector recouped recent losses on some improvement in risk appetite. Hong Kong's Hang Seng rose 0.8%, while South Korea's KOSPI jumped 1.1% to its highest level since early 2022. In fact, South Korea's stock market accessibility for short selling has improved and has no major issues, according to MSCI, as investors brace for next week's market classification for the global index provider and the hope that the country gets an upgrade. The stock market of Asia's fourth largest economy is currently categorized as an emerging market by MSCI, despite many other metrics indicating its developed status. South Korea has been chasing after developed market status for some years, and investors hope next week's classification will include South Korea being added to the watch list for an upgrade. The benchmark index, the KOSPI, has had a stellar year, surging 24% so far, marking it out as the best performing Asian stock market in 2025, as political clarity and optimism around corporate reform buoyed investor sentiment. China's mainland Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 and Shanghai Composite Indices rose 0.3% and 0.1% respectively, showing little reaction to the People's Bank leaving its benchmark loan prime rate unchanged. But the PBOC is still expected to trim the rate further this year as Beijing moves to shore up sluggish economic growth. China's stock market sentiment has remained flat amid lukewarm macroeconomic conditions and geopolitical instability, according to Morgan Stanley's latest analysis. The Weighted Market Sentiment Analysis, the MSASI, held steady at 66%, while the simple MSASI remained at 53% compared to the June 11 cutoff date, indicating investor sentiment has not shifted significantly despite market fluctuations. And at the close in India, the Nifty 50 rose 1.29%, while the India VIX, which measures the implied volatility of the Nifty 50 options, was down 4.59% to 13.6. That's a new one-month low. The Australian share market fell to the lowest in more than 2 weeks on Friday as investors took some money off the table as they wait to see if the US joins Israel's conflict with Iran. The benchmark ASX 200 fell 0.2% to 8,505.5 on Friday. That's the fourth day in a row and the lowest level since the start of June, as 6 out of 11 sectors traded in the red. Over the week, the exchange has fallen just 0.5%. The share market is at high risk of a sharp near-term pullback as the risk of an oil supply disruption flowing from the war with Iran is high and Trump's tariff threat is far from resolved, said AMP's head of investment strategy, Shane Oliver. Yep, I agree with that. On the ASX, losses in the bank sector weigh, with CBA down 0.2% to 182.53 and National Australia Bank down 0.5% to 38.91, while Westpac came off 1.1% to $3.21 and ANZ dropped 2.5% to 28.39. Defensive stocks were well bid, with healthcare companies like Pro Medicus and ResMed up more than 1%. Cochlear climbed 2.5% to $295.64. The mining sector finished mixed, with Liontown Resources up 0.8% to 65 cents after initially falling on a Citi downgrade to sell. The broker has cut its lithium price forecast by 15 to 20% over the next 3 years. The news sent Pilbara Minerals down 5% to $1.23 and Mineral Resources 6.2% to $20.69. In corporate news, Betta rose 5.3% to 30 cents after it lobbed an all-share bid for PointsBet as it attempts to kill its rival sale Japanese giant Mixi. PointsBet shares remain in a trading halt. And Boeing coking coal plunged 48.6% to 18 cents after it announced that depressed coal markets and the unsustainable Queensland coal royalty regime result in its temporarily pausing operations at part or all of its flagship Burton mine complex near Moranbah. In passing, I note that the former Federal Coalition Minister Simon Birmingham has been appointed as Chief Executive of the Australian Banking Association, replacing Anna Bligh. Jobs for the boys, I ask. As the ABA CEO, I will always put trust in Australia's banking system first, pursue a competitive regulatory environment, and work to ensure innovation in banking strengthens Australia's financial interests, Birmingham said in a statement. And I guess he will also say, yes, it's all going digital, don't need cash anymore. In crypto, Bitcoin and its crypto peers were unfazed by more hawkish Federal Reserve policy earlier in the week. While the US Central Bank left interest rates unchanged in line with expectations, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said that a meaningful increase in inflation was expected as Trump's trade tariffs impacted the economy. Bitcoin was last $104,000. On a positive note, regulatory developments in Washington have seen a tailwind for crypto. The US Senate approved the Genius Act, which aims to regulate stablecoins and set standards for companies issuing stablecoins. The vote received strong support of 68 to 30, paving the way for such coins to become a mainstream tool for digital payments and other financial instruments. This act is the first to regulate cryptocurrencies. If signed into law, which is increasingly likely, it would offer more clarity and confidence around stablecoin use, encouraging wider adoption and growth. Amid those fundamental cross currents, institutional demand has remained strong. US Bitcoin ETFs recorded an eighth straight day of inflows, attracting $2.4 billion. Over the past 30 days, Bitcoin ETF net inflows have surged by 128,000 Bitcoins, marking the largest institutional accumulation since early 2024. And the number of whales have been on the rise over the past 10 days, with an increase of 231 whale wallets. Meanwhile, whale deposits jumped from $2.3 billion to $4.59 billion in a single day. The figures reflect increased confidence among high net worth entities as they appear to be positioning for a price increase. Or maybe they're just looking towards crypto because they don't like what they see elsewhere. And this is the point, really. We are in very uncertain territory. This uncertainty will continue to play out. There are many indicators suggesting that markets are overpriced and overvalued, and corrections are likely. But of course, how and when is the big question. And a lot of it does hinge on what Trump does or doesn't say or do, which is not a very comforting thought. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.